Welcome. You're listening to the Board Games and Beer Podcast. Welcome back to the Board Game and Beer Podcast. This is episode 2. I am your host, Vel, and joining me once again is my co-host, Phil. So, Phil, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Vel. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. It's kind of a quiet Sunday and whatever. Kind of looking forward to having some time off today and recording another great show here. So anyway, well, the other thing I would like to mention is the theme that was conducted at the front end of our podcast was done by the astonishing Andrew Allen, who can be found at Keys with Soul. We will put a link on our webpage so that you can take a look at that if you want to look and see what he does. Also, Phil, I'd like to... Did you get a chance to look at our new logo that we've got up on the site now and that's up also on iTunes and Stitcher?
I did get a chance. It's a pretty excellent logo that we have now. Thanks to Carter Johnson, right?
Yep, sure is. Yeah, she did a great job on that. And I really want to throw a big shout out to her. She's the daughter of Scott Johnson, who is a very famous podcaster, does a segment, The Instance, and The Morning Stream, and a bunch of stuff on the Frog Pants Studio Network. And I can't thank her and him enough for doing that for us. I thought she just knocked that thing out of the park. Yeah, and the other thing I'd like to mention, too, is that if anybody's got any feedback on that, we'd love to hear about it on our website if you want to post there, or if you want to do it on emailing the show, boardgamesandbeerpodcast@gmail.com. And anyway, I think it looks really good, and I'm really happy with it. So anyway, Phil, let's get caught up here a little bit. So what's been happening with you this last week, you know, maybe game-wise or not game-wise?
It's been a busy week. last Sunday, we played games at Israeli's, one of the local places here. And then Thursday, we also played games, so getting around.
Right, exactly. So it's been kind of a quiet, not real crazy week for me. We've had some stuff going on. Yeah, we did have that one on Thursday. This weekend, they moved some of the stuff to this, what was it, the Great American Author Expo?
That is correct.
So they moved a lot of our game stuff for the weekend over there. I spent some time over there on Friday night, and I was also over there yesterday as well. And they had a decent crowd of people turning out for that or whatever. And, you know, there's some vendors and a lot of people. It was a lot of authors, obviously, selling books and things. But it was a lot of horror and sci-fi based things and so on. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the thing was, it was actually one of the authors there. I actually knew her. I used to work with her. So I went up buying her book. And she says, well, you have to read it. And I said, well, of course I'm going to read it. But I got to get through Game of Thrones first. So anything else you want to kind of add in here at the beginning of the show? You know, any shout outs or anything you want to mention? Any games that you played this last week that you kind of struck your fancy that you're kind of interested in? Or
Yeah, we played Lewis and Clark, the Expedition, or just Lewis and Clark, something like that. I liked that one quite a bit.
Yeah, we tried that out on last Sunday. I thought that was good. It was a good game. And that one seems to be, I'm going to throw a little thing with the Dice Tower podcast does a bunch of award stuff. And that one's actually been nominated for several awards for its artwork and some of the gameplay mechanics and stuff like that. So, go ahead.
It is a very pretty game to look at. Very well done mechanics, too. It's a little strange at first, but you can understand it. It's not that hard.
Right.
Of course, I won, so I might say that. But of course.
Yeah, you always tend to like the games you win, I suppose. It's always that kind of that way, isn't it? So, but it's something we can talk about a little bit more there. So anyway, what we'll do, we'll head off into our first segment, which is going to be on the calendar. So, what do we got store for on the calendar? We're going to go through some of the events that we've got coming up for our meetup group. And obviously, if you're in our area, they're always more welcome to join us. We're on meetup.com at Board Games and Beer. Our first one is the Board Game Blitz. So our next one is next Sunday on April 27th.
And following that, we've got our Roundtable Games. That's going to be Thursday, May 1st.
May 1st, right. And then after that, we've got another Learn a New Board Game. That's going to be on May 11th.
We've got Common Kingdom Open Gaming on Wednesday night, April 23rd. Starts around 6 o'clock.
Okay, and then we have our Comic Kingdom Open Gaming on Saturday the 26th.
So we've got Traditional Game Night plus beer again on April 25th. That is a Friday, April 25th, and that'll be in the evening, 6 or 7, something like that.
Yep, and that one I believe we're full on, so that's coming up this Friday. That one's really tending to fill up quite a bit now. That one's really turned into a popular one for us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got our Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures game again on May 2nd. We just had another one of those on Friday. Really get much of a chance to play that when I walked in a little bit late because I was having some problems finding the spot in the venue this weekend for, you know, when we were doing that. But what about the last one on there?
Oh, right. We've got Arkham Horror in Reno, which is calendar yet. We might have one on Sunday, May 4th.
Sunday, May 4th? Okay. So I was kind of curious because I hadn't seen anything, so that's why I was asking you about that one. So anyway. And so the next thing I think we're going to head on into is we wanted to do a little bit of a RageCon discussion for you. Remember, that's taking place here in Reno from June 27th to the 29th at the Circus Circans Casino. The other thing we want to add with that is if you're interested in doing that, it's on ragecon.com. Phil and I kind of wanted to talk and maybe help some people out there as to what you had to do to get signed up for that. So when you do go to that website, it's going to allow you to obviously sign up to come to the convention, but also to get involved with, you know, what other games you might want to run and you might want to participate in. So what's the system, Phil, that we're using for that?
So we're using a free system called Warhorn to schedule the games. And Warhorn is going to require you to register with them, and that's free to do. And then you know you'll have to log in there.
Okay. All right. And I think what the way that works is you'll wind up creating an account. And I know this also works through Eventbrite, which is a pretty common app that's used on iPhones and Android and so on. And so then you can sign up for the games, request a date and time if you are going to run something, and then we can go ahead and add that to the schedule. So we're certainly trying to encourage people to run things and not only necessarily come and just play them.
The more people, the more games we can have, right?
Yep, exactly. So,
you can create a Warhorn account even if you're not sure you're going to go, or if you haven't purchased your convention pass yet, and then you can, that allows you to sign up for games or request a time and date to run a game.
The gentleman that's running, that's one of the main organizers of this, has extended, there's an early registration period that I know that they put up and been running for a couple of months now, and he has extended it, at least according to what I was seeing, up through the 30th of May. So
the
30th of
May?
Yeah.
Or the 30th of April?
30th of May is okay, according to what I've got here.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be some other stuff, but the last time I checked on there, it looked like the 30th of May. So hopefully we're letting everybody in on the correct information on that. If there's any changes or whatever, we'll throw that up on the webpage and let people know about it. So yeah. What we have in store for that is we do have a three-day pass that it's for Circus guests. And if you do the early registration, it's $20. If you do it after the 30th, then it goes up to $30.
And then if you, that's for Circus guests. If you're not a Circus guest, then the three-day pass is $30 early, $35 regular, and $40 at the door.
Right. And then if you want to come Friday, this is going to be for the Circus guest as well. It's $10 early registration and $15 at the door.
Mm-hmm. And the Saturday only pass is going to be, you know, $20 early and $25 at the door.
Correct. And then the Sunday only is going to be $15 and $20 regular at the door. So, yeah, I would assume that those three prices that are there have to do with anybody that shows up on those particular days.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yep. So we're really looking forward to some people coming to that and coming and playing some games with us and whatever. And maybe you can meet some of us in person. And I'm kind of planning on doing a live broadcast from the event, and we'll talk to some people and we'll throw that on our show. So with that, anything else we can add about RageCon?
A lot of games to happen. A lot of games to play. A lot of games to run if you want to run. I would definitely create a Warhorn account and check out the schedule, see what games you're interested in. Some of them are going to be, you know, player restricted. For instance, I'm running an Arkham Horror one that's going to be capped at 8.
So we are going to head into our next segment, which is In the News, which is also what we refer to as In the Pipeline. Okay, this segment is about what new games are coming out and what may look good or not good, for that matter, to us. And we were going to do a little bit of a follow-up on our last week's show with Andrew Rader. His interview is now up on YouTube. So if you go to YouTube and search Board Games and Beer podcast, he has done a little video audio-only snippet of the interview that I did with him, and it really, really turned out well. So if you want to listen to that again, I encourage you to go there. So what's the, just real quick, let's do a little quick status on where his Kickstarter is sitting, Phil.
Yeah, so the game is Evolve, the game of Unnatural Selection, the name last time, I think. And right now we have pledged $5,440 of the $2,500 goal. So we're past 200% funding, so this is really, it's going to go confident. There's 12 days to go, and your price range is going to be anywhere from $1 minimum up to like $84 for teachers. But the game itself, it looks really good.
Yeah, and he's looked like he's added some stuff too. Like I know there was like half, he had one of the goals in there too where you could have a picture, your picture, your pet, or something like that put on the cards. And I believe he's got like half of those are already gone, at least at this point. So we'll continually keep our eyes on that. I'm really looking forward to that one. And I know a lot of the people that have listened to the show, the previous one, are really rather excited about, you know, what's going to happen with that game. So anyway, well, we'll definitely keep some keep our ears open and keep following that as it kind of progresses. So what we're going to head into here is we have a fantastic interview this week with the designers, and we did mention this last week, the first podcast, of Transylvania Curses and Traitors, this Kickstarter that's going to be started by Lauren and Jamie Cunningham. They were fantastic to talk with. And we're going to let you listen to that interview right now. And we will be back after that interview with them in just a bit. And I hope you enjoy that interview. Welcome to the Board Games and Beer podcast. We have a special interview this evening with Lauren and Jamie Cunningham of Wabai Games. And they are going to talk, we're going to talk to them about their upcoming Kickstarter, Transylvania Curses and Traitors. And so with that, I'd like to introduce them and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Great. So I've been kind of following this for a while. And to me, it's a very interesting genre of game, at least for me. I like kind of gothic horror sort of thing. So you kind of grabbed my interest. And the gaming group that I'm in, they tend to have a lot of people that like this as well. So I kind of like the play style and everything that you picked. So I guess my first question to both of you is, like, how long have you both been into gaming of any sort?
Oh, wow. So we were registered for games on our wedding registry. So that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of those were sort of the Walmart games that you can get.
We used to do a lot of Taboo and Cranium.
Okay.
And then we had some some good friends of ours made the big mistake, and they introduced us to Settlers of Catan.
Which is our gateway game, as it is for many. He had the original German version. It was very difficult to read the cards.
Right.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
So our good friends Brian and Jessica, they had us play Settlers of Catan, and I didn't want to put it down. I wanted to play it again and again and again.
Which is amazing, because he lost for like the first 9 games in a row, and he still loved it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, and then it just sort of escalated from there.
I think we started making our very first board game within a year of playing Settlers of Catan.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Great. I guess my other thing, since you started designing, I'm just kind of curious, what was that first game before I actually ask the next question?
The first game we created was a game called, which we call Six Kingdoms, and it was really ripping off Settlers of Catan. It was basically merging it with D&D.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very Settlers of Catan type thing where you overtake tiles and build on tiles, but instead of just playing settlers, you play one of six different races: dragons, elves,
people, men, goblins.
And so you build castles. We added additional mechanics to have armies that are more actively on the board. We have aqueducts. We have all kinds of crazy stuff added.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the game just kept growing. It got bigger and bigger, and it's still play in less than 2 hours, but it's got so many components to it. This thing weighs like 35 pounds.
A friend of ours built us a box that looks like a giant castle. We'll have to send a picture of it to you.
Mm-hmm.
The box itself weighs 30 pounds. It's made out of MDF. It's a giant castle. Each of the factions has their own turret on that magnetizes to the top of the board.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And actually, this thing plays in an hour and a half for six people. It actually plays very fast for a game that takes settlers and adds all these layers to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was just beyond what we could even think about trying to publish.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly just for our friends.
Yeah. Oh, I got you. So it's just kind of a private game.
Just for our friends, yes.
Gotcha. Well, it might be something to think about, whatever happens with this one. That might be the next thing down the road.
Yeah, Transylvania is actually our sixth or seventh game that we've made, but it's the first one that we thought was worth doing something real with. The rest of them for our friends.
Gotcha.
Some of them were miserable failures and just wouldn't work.
Well, that's how this goes, I think. You've got to, see what works and kind of go from there. I guess my next question is, what was kind of the inspiration behind the game?
Well, I had been watching too much Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Right.
And the board games we had been playing at that time were Betrayal at House in the Hill and Witch of Salem. And I took components from both of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And our company is called Wouldn't It Be Awesome If, because we were out for a walk with our dog, which is when we come up with these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like a lightning bolt, hit me. And I literally said, wouldn't it be awesome if there was this game where you went to Transylvania, you played an explorer, and you were trying to seek and find this knowledge to solve the curse, but that very same knowledge could transform you into a monster, and then you eat your friends. It was like the name of the game and the concept were just instantaneous. It was awesome.
The mechanics took a whole lot longer.
Yeah.
There you go. But you got the idea rolling there.
Okay. Yeah. I knew exactly what I wanted in an instant, and so we've been just working for the past 2 years to make those mechanics fit that vision.
Gotcha. So I guess my next thing is, how much, I would assume you had to do some research or something. So how much research did you kind of put into bringing some of the elements of that game, your game, to life, I suppose?
Research as into like Transylvania or the lore or?
Oh, any of it. Just kind of in general blanket.
Well, I mean, Transylvania or vampires or werewolves, not very much, because we really tried to keep it on a pop culture level.
Gotcha.
Things that everybody knows, that three vampire bites makes you a vampire. That's kind of something that's in the vampire lore. The werewolf bites you, and then you have the full moon, you become a werewolf. So we tried to keep it.
There's so many conflicting stories. We had some background in it already, just because it's interesting.
And
we sort of added to it as we went. So we've gotten the fairy tales from Transylvania, like books at the library, and looked up different places in Transylvania occasionally to like find what kind of tiles we want.
Searching on Wikipedia for things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're talking about making a Kickstarter, I've spent hours and hours and hours figuring out how to do this process. So I will give an awesome plug to a blog from Jamie Stegmeier. You go to StonemeyerGames.com, go to their blog. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
You need to check this thing out. He has the most comprehensive blog on how to run a Kickstarter campaign you could ever find. And he's going to be writing, he's in the middle of writing a book on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And he just past. He has currently, it just ended, Tuscany is the biggest Euro game ever on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So we've been following his blog religiously. I've read the entire thing word for word, including all comments, 3 times.
Oh, there you go.
As well as going back to it for reference constantly.
Right.
So we've done a ton of research on how to do a Kickstarter, how to make a board game, how to find manufacturers, how to find artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has taken us a full year to just make the Kickstarter campaign.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I didn't realize it was, well, I guess there is a lot of stuff that's involved with it, but it's really amazing how many games now, you know, are really going this route. They're starting to come out this way. I mean, you've certainly got your bigger companies that are doing stuff, but a lot of people seem to be kind of going the Kickstarter route. But there's a lot of interesting stuff, I think, that's coming out that way, because there's tons of creative people out there.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's opened the door for that, which is really good, I think.
I think a lot of people that play games like have ideas like, oh, I wish there were a game like this. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people out there with ideas. And now for the first time, there's mm-hmm. really an avenue to put that out there.
Right, exactly. So I'm gonna kind of bounce around here a little bit. But something that I've noticed with the, because I do own a, or I do have a access to the print and play that you kind of disseminated out to a lot of people. I really like card design you have in this. So I'm just kind of curious, are these of your design, or was this somebody you contacted, or do you have something in mind, or
like the type of cards and what they do, or the actual art itself?
I'm actually talking about the art itself.
We hired an artist out of the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
We found her on DeviantArt.
Yeah. Yeah, we found her on DeviantArt, and we were looking for an artist that liked to do Victorian and steampunk art.
There you
and
go.
We found her, and she was our number one choice, and we actually ended up asking 7 or 8 artists to give us a quote to do our project.
And we got a couple of quotes back, and she was by far our favorite.
Yeah, our top 2 choices said yes, which was amazing, but we just thought hers was perfect. She was so excited about it. Victorian art is her favorite genre.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's actually only been doing this for 3 years now.
Wow. Well, I got to say, her artwork's pretty impressive from the stuff that I'm seeing. Like, I actually have a couple of the cards right here. So I've got to say this. I kind of noticed something. I wonder if this is kind of done on purpose. So I'm going to throw both of you guys under the bus here a little bit.
Okay.
No, it's not bad. Trust me. I'm not that mean. I kind of noticed that seems to me a little bit of resemblance to a couple of characters to both of you.
And
Okay. And then I want you to tell me if you think I'm right here. I'm thinking that, Lauren, you, the inventor, looks like somewhat like you to me.
That's not a mistake, actually.
Okay. I got you. And then Jamie, I think, is it the secret agent is the one?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty observant.
Well, one thing that we're doing, you'll notice that the rest of your character cards are blank except for the vampire, zombie,
right.
and werewolf.
Right.
The reason we left those blank on purpose, and as soon as you open up our Kickstarter preview link, you'll find that we are offering those characters to our Kickstarter backers to join us in becoming the other characters.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Because, you know, I guess that was my question too, because when we did the print and play, I actually, a guy in my group, the guy, he's kind of funny. I'm going to throw him under the bus here a little bit for just a moment. but he's a big collector of games, and he has tons of stuff. And, you know, I totally get it. But what he ends up doing is he buys the game, but then he also does he prints out a copy too to play. So he has like 2 sets of everything. So he offered to do this for me, and then he goes, well, I'm not going to cut all the pieces out for you. And I go, well, that's fine. I know how to use scissors. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm not that dangerous. But that was the thing he was saying. Well, he goes, there's a lot of those that didn't have, you know, clip art, you know, I didn't have any pictures. So he went and stuck a bunch of pictures in just so that it kind of looked good. And I thought some of the stuff he picked was pretty good. I didn't know he was doing that.
Yeah.
So.
What's funny is the first copy that we made, we wanted something that would engage people to play with us. And we didn't just want like a black and white paper game, because that won't really engage people. We wanted to really bring them into the theme. So our original explorer was Laura Croft.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
we had all these like images stolen off of like Google Images, like put in there. So there used to be art on all of those.
Yeah.
And we've taken it off for the print and play that we're sending out because we don't have rights to any of those pictures.
Right.
And
right.
So yeah, everything that's in the print and play right now is our art. And we haven't done some of the art because we're going to let our Kickstarter backers contribute.
That's an awesome idea.
To
that's a really
their
cool
likenesses
idea.
To some of the characters.
Oh, that's,
and so the char-
that's a
the
really
characters
good
will be yeah the characters will be inspired by their likeness. It's not
similar to the way that
the
secret agent and the inventor are inspired by ours.
Yeah,
that is.
So we sent her some pictures of us and some pictures of like some of the like the concepts that we wanted the characters to look like, and she put those together.
Right. Well, that's a fantastic idea. I didn't realize you were doing that. I really like that. That kind of even sells it to me even more. Try to get some people. Hey, you get to have your likeness on a game.
Yeah, and the way we're we're going to do those character cards is they are actually going to be front and back.
Like double-sided.
Double-sided with a male version of the character on one side and a female on the other side.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know, if you're playing with a mixed group of guys and gals, you can pick the gender that you want. We really didn't want to leave females out of this game.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of games that we play that have, like, there's like one token female character. And so when we're playing with three couples, it's like, all right, which one of us is going to be the pink bunny character? You know? So we wanted to make sure that there's an equal number of guys and girls. And so the original game, half of the characters were male and half of the characters were female. And we were trying to figure out, you know, if we have Kickstarter backers, like, do we choose which ones are male and female? Do we let them kind of decide? And that's when we decide, okay, we'll do two characters. We'll have the abbot and the abbess. We'll have the male secret agent and the female secret agent. So there'll always be a card for everybody.
Excellent. Yeah, well, that's always that's a really good idea. So I guess the next thing, gave you the ideas for the card names? I mean, I noticed, like you said, it's kind of steampunk stuff, but I mean, I've noticed you got like the inventor, secret agent, scientist, explorer, you know, witch hunter, those kinds of things. Where did you kind of get the names for that?
It really kind of developed over playtesting and with our friends that got involved and just trying to get ideas. Some of them just seemed natural.
Some of them we found cool pictures for on Google Images. We're like, ooh, that's fun. We'll make that a character.
Mm-hmm. And we wanted to kind of base some of these characters off of very recognizable people. Like the Explorer is supposed to be a combination of Lara Croft and Indiana Jones. You know, the scientist is going to be a little bit of a mad scientist.
Dr. Frankenstein-esque. We have the Sherlock Holmes-esque character and the sleuth.
Yeah, and also, too, we have the characters all have their own unique attributes. So I came up with a matrix for the minimum level of attributes and the maximum level. And then we looked at those and some of it came down to deciding what attribute came up with: movement, mind, attack, and spirit. My original cards had like 8 attributes, and Jamie was like, no.
Right.
So some of that we decided attack, mind, and spirit were the best 3 to keep for the die rolls. And so, you know, for high spirit, it made a lot of sense to have an abbess or a priest, an abbot, you know. So it just kind of pieced itself together.
We did have some characters that got, you know, vetoed. We had a pirate for a while, and then people are like, you realize Transylvania is landlocked, right? Where did the pirate come from?
Right, exactly.
So he is now the big game hunter.
I gotcha. So I guess I'm kind of, you've kind of talked about, I know you guys are Kickstarters, tentatively, you're going to launch it on May 1st.
May 1st should be good to go.
Okay, and then how long is that going to run?
It'll be May 1st to May 31st.
Okay.
May 1st is a Thursday, and May 31st is a Sunday, so we'll probably kick it off about 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. on the 1st, and we'll probably wrap it up 11 p.m. on the 31st.
Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of talked about that a little bit, but it sounds like you've progressed quite a ways with that and so on. And I noticed you released your YouTube video up on YouTube last night, and I got a chance to look at it. And I will definitely, in my up on my blog and webpage, I'm definitely going to put a link to that because people have got to see this. I mean, you guys did a fantastic job on that. I'm like hooked right there just watching
we're so excited about it. I had the idea for how I wanted to do it, and Jamie made it happen exactly how I wanted it.
So you did a great job on that, so I think you're going to get some people just interested just then, because the quality is very good.
Thank you very much. This is my first time doing anything of this level of complexity
that
software.
And I'm kind of digressing a little bit, but I'm just saying, through playtesting with my group, I know one of the guys in my group, one of his comments was, he goes, you know, I really like the quality of the pieces. And he says, I'm really excited to see the final product and what they come up with, because he's somebody that really likes the detail and in the pieces and stuff like that. And I think if you do those sorts of things, that always makes your game sell a lot better. I mean, I just digress a little bit, but I picked up a new game today, and I was reading some posts on it, and somebody said, well, why are you making these cheap cards? You know, the people that buy Euro games and stuff like that are probably more willing to spend a little bit more because they want good quality stuff. But it seems to me you're really not skimping on that sort of thing, which I think is really, really good. That's going to be a good selling point for it.
Yeah. Once you look at our preview page that we sent you, you'll see it's definitely going to be good quality stuff. We're actually working. We've decided to work with a manufacturing company called What's Games. Mm-hmm. And they manufacturer King of Tokyo.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, played that a few times.
It's a very high-quality game. They also manufacture Takedo, The Hobbit, some really good high-quality games, and we're really, really pleased with them. The initial quality that they offer at their base levels is higher than a lot of companies. They might not be Panda, but we found Panda just to be too expensive,
and
the quality, I don't think, was that much higher to warrant how much higher their prices were.
Right. So we tried to start it out as high quality as we could and still manage to get a product, which we can't, you know, produce 5,000 games, necessarily or more. And then some of the stretch goals that we're offering should even increase the quality beyond that.
Yeah, so we're going to, beyond the base levels, we're going to have stretch goals that increase the quality of everything from the thickness of the box itself to the box insert to going from purple core cards to black core cards. The highest quality, some of the highest quality components. And actually, I asked them about upgrading the board tiles, and he's like, no, our standard level is the thickest you want, that for the board tiles and so forth. So.
And of course, we're really hoping we can get the monsters turned into miniatures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Yeah.
That'll be so much fun.
Right. Well, it's particularly based on your, I'm just saying, looking at the artwork that you have for that is really, really good.
Our artist is fantastic. Yeah. She's just amazing.
And I think, like I said, I think that's the thing I find really, really impressive. That'll hook me into a game right there. It's just the quality and the artwork and stuff like that, because I tend to enjoy those kinds of things.
I'm a sucker for art, too. If a game doesn't have good art, it's hard for it to suck me in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think you're going to grab a lot of people that way, honestly. I mean, the really good gamers, I think, are going to appreciate that sort of effort that you put into it. So I guess maybe this is a little bit, I'm jumping ahead here, but we have to see how your Kickstarter goes. But depending on how that goes, do you have any, expansion ideas that you might already have in the works, or you'd be willing to share with us? Or
yeah, we definitely do. We've been kicking around ideas, and before we commit to anything, we'd really like to get feedback from our Kickstarter backers to see what it is that they want. But expansion ideas are other monsters that would make sense.
Right.
You know, maybe a Frankenstein monster, maybe
a witch. We were thinking about adding it.
Yeah, actually, one expansion we really thought about was adding a potential seventh player who's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
And who actually is the reason that there is a curse over Transylvania in the first place.
So she has cast the curse over Transylvania, and she plays with her own deck and has her... So basically, in her world, the curse is only half complete, and she's trying to get it fully completed. And
before the players can break it.
And so it's a race between the witch to finish the curse and the adventurers to break the curse before she can complete it.
And you're doing some sort of co-op type stuff, because right now it's really every man for himself. You're trying to get your cards put together so that you can win. So we've had some people ask for some more cooperative type gaming mechanics.
So we thought about some co-op rules, some different rule versions to let you play at co-op or play the game different ways. Of course, just adding new board tiles to the game so you have just this endless variety of places to explore.
We've had some people talk to us about perhaps doing sort of a mini game. So something like almost a little pocket game where you can play with the miniatures from the game, or and have a smaller version that would play really quickly.
We actually have already worked at a two-player micro game pocket game already. It's not complete, but we started.
So everything has a lot of mechanic that needs to be worked out and play tested. So none of that will be available on this Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But if it does really well, it would probably go back to the Transylvania universe and work on it some more.
Right. So I have an idea, because one of the monsters I was thinking of is the mummy or something.
Yes, that's been definitely suggested to us.
We've been playing around with the ideas for that one, yeah.
Right. Because, something I noticed in the playtesting that we've had the game, I actually do tend this game can kind of to be somewhat co-op. It does lend itself to that, actually, because what I've noticed in a lot of the games we've played is that the other players, if somebody turns into a monster or something, or even initially, tend to kind of work together. And we've had very little of the, you land on the same space, because you do have a mechanic in your game that people, I'm sure, not aware of, that two characters can compete and make a roll off with their abilities against each other and take a quest card from them. And we've had very little, we've had none of that happen in all the games that I play. And I'm not saying that it's not there. I like having those dynamics, there. But I think it kind of does lend, because when the monster comes out, everybody starts to work together. It's like, oh crap, we got to get this guy. And if it comes out early, what I've seen, that's usually doom. It's all right. It ends really fast. And I've noticed some of the games that went pretty quick. And then if it lasts for a little while, then a game gets really, really interesting. interesting and the strategy starts to come into play. And I don't know, I mentioned it on my last podcast, but that's the first time I've seen somebody win with the knowledge cards.
Well, we have play tested this thing nearly 100 times that we've kept record of, and mm-hmm. we've really, really kept a lot of statistics on the game. And we have really found that about 50% of the time an adventurer will win, about 50% of the time a monster will win. Mm-hmm. And of the adventurer wins, they kill a monster about half the time and win with right. quest cards about half the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the quest cards is maybe slightly less than half when they win. Mm-hmm. But we have all kinds of epic games where they have to chop their way past 3 zombie tokens, the zombie and the vampire, to run into the church with 1 health and mm-hmm. all the quest cards to win the game.
Right, right, exactly.
And when that happens, people stand up and cheer.
Yeah,
and
there you go. There
it's so satisfying when the game ends that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, like I was saying, I think I've talked to you about this before. The one thing I do kind of like, I don't mind, honestly, having a mechanic or some way to win that's more difficult. Even my gaming group, I think a lot of us like that because it brings a challenge. Like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I like that because it goes, well, God, it's so easy. You just, you know, turn into a monster and you kill somebody or you kill the monster, game's over. But I like having that. You have that element in there that makes the game, I think, a lot more fun. I like that kind of stuff. Just because it's not easy, yeah. I like that kind of stuff.
It is a challenge, and it used to be easier. We took out 1 copy of every knowledge card that's in the game that you got
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because we were playing it with an additional copy of each knowledge card before, and we just found it was just too easy. Mm-hmm. There weren't enough monsters. There wasn't enough carnage. Mm-hmm. You know, we want carnage and death.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Chaos.
Lots yeah. of chaos.
Well, that usually happens a lot in that game that I've noticed a yeah. lot.
And the great, what we love about this game is it is so different every time you play,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and there is no given. We've had a monster come out on the first turn,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've
and
had the
they
same
don't, and they don't win.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, interesting.
Just because a monster pops out on the first turn doesn't mean they're going to win.
Right.
If the other players are smart enough or lucky enough, you know, they can stave off the monsters.
Mm-hmm. We haven't been so fortunate. Usually, that's doom for my group. And that yeah. monster pops up in the first couple of turns, everybody just starts to freak and they go, okay, well, they're going to win. They don't get really stupid about it or anything, but I just noticed that that's usually not been real positive in my group for that. So that the next thing I was going to say is, you know, I've talked to you about this before. You know, we have a gaming convention here in June from the 27th to 29th called RageCon. It's one of my members is heavily involved in organizing the whole thing. Matter of fact, I kind of want him doing some stuff on my podcast, but he says, I got to wait till this is over. But, I am more than willing to plan on bringing this game, even though your Kickstarter, you know, will be over and depending on how things are going to print. But I'm more than willing to bring the game and play it because I'm actually one of the volunteers and it's one of the ones I was planning on bringing. And,
check our schedule and see what our demands are on our prototypes. But we primarily need our prototypes that we have for we're going to a convention called Geekway to the West in St. Louis, which starts on May 15th.
Okay. Right.
And after the Kickstarter's over and after Geekway's over, I'm not sure if we'll really need all of our prototypes because we have 5. We might even put mm-hmm. one of the nice prototypes in the mail to you.
Oh, okay, great.
So you can have it for the convention.
Yeah, because I think it's that I'm more willing to get you some bridge and play the game because that'll give you even more exposure, you know, depending on the amount of people we have because I like it.
Exposing a success.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, and like I said, if worse comes to worse, I have a good copy of the print and play that I can certainly bring. So, you know, anyway. So I guess I'm going to kind of maybe we might want to start wrapping this up unless you want to add anything else that you want to promo or you want to ask me some questions or, you know, there's not much more I can think about unless you wanted to discuss really briefly what the game was about or anything like that.
Yeah, well, maybe we can just kind of tell people what we love about the game.
Right, you know? Right. Sure.
One thing that I like in board games is a game that you can play again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created a modular board, which always makes every experience different. We've got a deck of 60 event cards, and I think 52 of those are unique cards, and you'll never see all of those in one game. You might see a quarter of them.
Right.
So we put in so many events that you don't need so that you can always have new things, you know, every game. There's a deck of 70 quest cards, and I think half of those are unique cards. So there's a lot of unique cards.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you play, you're going to have different things. You get to pick a different character, you know, mm-hmm. every time you play.
Sometimes you play 2 or 3 characters in one game because
they tend
to die off quickly.
Right. But, you know, I think that's a good point in the game. I think that sometimes even missed with the group that I play with is like, you know, you're not out of the game.
Right. right.
You know, you, yeah, you get to, you can keep playing. You
know? Yeah, in Transylvania, dying is half the fun.
Yeah,
we very rarely win with our first characters, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, sometimes you're more likely to win with your second character, be that a monster or be that your mm-hmm. second adventurer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the multiple paths to victory, the replayability, the variable player powers, all the, you know, the modular board, and the dice, our dice are so chaotic, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. too.
The 3-0
yeah,
sides. The,
yeah, for yes. people who don't know, our dice have 3 sides that are a 0, and then a 1 side, a 2 side, and a 3 side, mm-hmm. and it makes a lot of possibilities happen.
We mm-hmm. have seen Lauren roll with 10 dice and get a 1.
Mm-hmm. I am the world's worst vampire. Yep.
When someone rolls 7 or more dice and get complete, like, nothing, zeros, we call that a Lauren.
Oh, there you go. Sorry. Yeah. You going to put that in the rules too? Or is
yeah,
in
your,
down at the bottom at the end of the rule book or something is some errata or something like that? Some extra stuff.
We're so excited about this game. We have put about 2 years of our life into this game, literally 7 days a week, 2 or 3 hours a day almost. Mm-hmm. It's just been our passion project. It's been so much fun. If the Kickstarter is a miserable failure, the whole thing will be a great success mm-hmm. because we've met so many awesome people along the way, made new friends mm-hmm. from other countries, mm-hmm. you know, all over the United States. It's just been a fantastic and fun process. And I think the game is just as fun as the whole process has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you do a lot better than you think, you know, honestly, from what I see. I mean, you guys are certainly passionate about what you're doing. And I think a lot of people really recognize those sorts of things. I mean, I certainly do. And so then I'm willing to talk about stuff like that, you know, and you kind of spread the word. I mean, I'm not super famous or anything like that, but I'm certainly willing to do it.
Yeah, we appreciate it a lot. It's been fantastic to, you know, meet you via Twitter, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and I think, you know, kind of, you know, talking to both of you and so on through that and emails and so on, it's just kind of inspired me a little bit more to get my podcast kind of off the ground, because this has been something I've been kicking around probably for about a year and a half, I think, before I finally got the thing going. So, you know.
We're very happy to be an inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely. You should definitely go for it. You're doing it. I mean, the first podcast was very professional. I mean, I think you're going to pick up a lot of followers very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to get some people to listen to it. And just it's just like I said, for fun. And, you know, we'll kind of see where it goes. And I
mean, well, and it's board games and beer. And, you know, we're not really drinkers ourselves. But mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that love their beer. So mm-hmm. you're going to have 2 topics that people love.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is the perfect beer to drink while playing Transylvania?
Because, see, that was the same question I was going to ask you. turn around and put me on the spot. You know, I'm really not... The funny thing is, I'm not a huge beer drinker. I used to be. Oh, but let's see. God, what would be good? I would think probably something kind of dark. I'm thinking some kind of a stout. I don't know, like if you've ever heard of Samuel Smith's oatmeal stout was something I'd think of as dark and thick, and that kind of thing was what I would think I would go with, something like that, I guess, because you put me on the spot. So I'm going to flip the question around to you now and ask you the same thing.
I'm not familiar with a lot of beers. That's for sure.
Problem.
Yeah. For me, I don't know. I just, you know, the first sip of beer for me, it tastes kind of good.
Right.
And then the second sip is a little bit worse, and every sip after that gets worse. And I just, you know, I just never been able to develop the taste for it. So.
Right. Well, that's okay. I mean, like you could throw, you know, since it's really beer, we can kind of bend it to any kind of fermented sort of thing would work just fine. So if you want to maybe give something else, some other kind of alcoholic thing that you think goes good with that game.
It
could be wine or... You know, anything.
Hopefully a wine that's maybe kind of like the blood.
Maybe a nice Dracula dark red, and, you know,
yeah,
something.
Right.
It would definitely have to be a red wine.
Yeah, red wine for sure.
Mm-hmm. Any of them? Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, all of them will work, huh? Zinfandel,
yeah.
Whatever.
I think, we're not big wine buffs either.
Yeah,
we're terrible at this.
No, that's okay.
We're terrible.
That's why we asked you.
Yeah, exactly. And then I turn around and threw you under the bus. Good like that, I guess. So, I don't know if you wanted to add anything else, but I really, really appreciate you coming on and talking with us on the show. And what I will, like I said, I'll certainly do is I will put a link to Lauren and Jamie's site up on my I'll also put a link up there for the YouTube video, if that's okay with you, so that people can get a look at it there, and I can get that up before our next show, and you know, that this will definitely be part of that show on episode 2. So
that sounds good. Yeah, I guess in closing, you know, Kickstarter launches on May 1st. We've worked really hard on the project. We're really going to try to engage our backers during the campaign and communicate with them as much as possible to find out what we can do to make them happy with with it. We're certainly not done with, you know, the rule book, even the cards. I mean, everything's 100% done, but it's not done because we're going to collect all the feedback up to the last second before printing and make sure the game is as good as it can possibly be. We want this to be on people's shelf as a super high quality game that they want to pull out over and over and over. And we want people to be excited about it as we are. So.
Right, right. Well, that certainly shows, I think, in, you know, listening to both of you talk. And so to me, I think that's a huge selling point right there alone. It's just the enthusiasm and the blood, no pun intended, that you're putting into this game.
And we really want this to work because we have so many ideas for other games. And if this works and we can recoup our investment, then we can take that and get the next game going. We have a lot of ideas.
Right.
And we can't work on any of them until this is done because there is no time.
Right, right, right. Well, once again, I really want to thank you both for taking your time to talk to us on the Board Games and Beer podcast. And so what we'll do is we will head back into our ending segments. And I want to thank Lauren and Jamie Cunningham for talking with us on our podcast.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lauren and Jamie Cunningham. Once again, I really want to thank them for taking time out to talk about their game. Boy, these two, I'll tell you, are so passionate about this game. And I am really looking forward to this thing, making it through. And I'm really trying to promote it for them as much as I possibly can. So, Phil, I know you've played this with us. And our meetup groups played it quite a bit. We've got a lot of positive feedback from it, I've got to say. There was, you know, the things with the cards that a lot of people in our group had questions about. And, you know, listening to the interview, I thought it was very interesting. So in their Kickstarter, what they are doing, which I thought this was so cool, is some of the character cards, the scientist and several of them, didn't really have any artwork with them. But you know, I don't know if you noticed that a couple of the cards actually were already done. And it was the inventor and the secret agent. And if you recall, the inventor, I had asked them, and you obviously heard it in the interview, that those were likenesses of Lauren and Jamie in particular, which I thought was kind of cool. But anyway, on their Kickstarter, what they're doing, some of the Kickstarter goals they're going to have is that you can have your likeness drawn on the card as part, and you're actually included in the game, which I thought was really cool. So that's why some of those didn't have any artwork to them.
So I think having the option to, you know, that's certainly going to be like a backer tier level, like they describe in the Kickstarter. I think that's a fantastic way to get your backers involved in the community and, you know, the gaming community, really. The whole, each little game is kind of a community, and to get people involved. And I think, you know, it makes a lot of sense why there wasn't complete artwork, although for a game that hasn't even reached its Kickstarter, I kind of figured that maybe they just hadn't done that yet.
Oh, there was something I wanted to mention about that I totally spaced. So, Phil, did you get a chance to look at their Kickstarter video? I've thrown that up on our webpage. So have you had a chance to look at that by any chance?
I have not. I've not gotten a chance. I'll have to check that one out.
Oh, it's fantastic. They did a great job on that with what they did with the gameplay and everything like that. I thought they did a really, really spectacular job with that. So you have to take a look at that. We do have that up on our webpage. That's certainly going to be up on their Kickstarter when it starts May 1st. But if you get a chance ahead of time to take a look at that, go ahead and so we'll head off into our next segment, which is, well, we better talk about some beer. What do you think, Phil?
I think it's a great idea.
Okay, so we're going to now talk about, obviously, since we do talk about beer and board games on this, so that kind of goes hand in hand, you know, what kind of beer goes with maybe a game or whatever. But what we want to kind of to start with was something that we were looking at here is, Phil, what do you think about this idea of having perhaps a medieval fantasy beer helmet to drink beer out of?
I think it's a brilliant invention. I mean, it's clearly missing from our world, right? Is the option to play games and not have to lift up your beer.
Yeah, so I found this medieval fantasy beer helmet that looks like you can buy. Perhaps we'll throw this up on our webpage. but you know, it's like made out of metal, and it's got these two beer steins setting off to the side, obviously with the straws and everything that are there. So for the real hardcore beer drinkers out there, I don't know how comfortable this thing looks, though, honestly.
I'm not sure. Well, there's the page I'm looking at is an instructable, so you can make it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it is. How did I miss that? So actually, yeah, this is actually to make it, isn't it?
Yeah, that we should definitely put that up on the page.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you want a good, you know, hat to wear while you're playing board games, I would say this is definitely for those of you that are more ambitious. And if anybody ever does this, boy, we would love to have pictures of it or whatever. Playing your favorite game with your favorite beer in both of the steins. Sipping away, having fun with your friends.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
What better beer to have in your Dwarven beer stein, beer hat, than Fantasy Brewmaster's Dwarven Ale?
Yes, right? Yes, exactly, which is the beer that we were going to talk about this week. Now, where is this one in particular? Where do we have that? Where do they brew this at? Looks like it's in Naples, Florida, it sounds like.
That's what I'm seeing here, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was perfect. So maybe I picked the perfect things to go with it. So Fantasy Brewmaster's Bertison's Dwarven Ale. So what is it? What do they say about this one? So let's see.
It's a little brown in appearance, but not necessarily in taste. A bit of a nutty flavor.
Yep. I don't know. Sounds good to me. Robust and flavorful. And this beer proudly boasts a boldness that most elves fail to appreciate. And a complexity only the most seasoned of men can comprehend. Think you have what it takes to drink a legend? Grab a tankard and pour yourself some of Bertison's Dwarven Ale. And please make sure you put it in this beer helmet that we are going to link onto our webpage so that you can really have fun with it.
Yeah, yeah. Bonus points for anyone who does that and then sends it to us.
Yes, exactly. And we'll have to think of some kind of award or something we can give somebody for that. So yep. Anyway. So here we're going to go. We're going to go into our segment again. We're going to change it up a little bit this week. And this time we're going to let Phil get a little bit involved in this. So Phil and I are going to kind of trade off here and pick a game. And then we both have to, on the cuff here, somewhat we did last week, but I'm going to get a little more involved in this, and ask each other what beer goes with what game. So, Phil, I'm going to start off with you. Go ahead. You throw a game at me, and I will have to come up with some kind of beer that's going to go with it.
Okay. How about Trivial Pursuit?
Trivial Pursuit. Oh, what would we want to drink with Trivial Pursuit? How about Arrogant Bastard Ale? That's yes. What I'm going with.
That's a good one. All right, go ahead, Bill. Fire one off.
All right, let's see. What can we throw at you, Phil? Let's see. Let's go with, how about Pompeii? Have you played that one before? The Downfall of Pompeii. Well, you're going to have to roll with it.
No, I got it. Yeah. I'm thinking Rolling Rock.
Rolling Rock. Hey, yeah. That's a good one. Great. Yeah. Rocks rolling down the hill. That was good. Yeah. That was good. We're thinking. We're on it.
All right. How about... Shoot, I don't think I've played any board games. I don't know. how about one we played on Thursday? How about Speculation?
Speculation. What can we do with Speculation? Speculation beer. What can you speculate with? I'm going to go with Wild Horse Ale.
Okay.
From Great Basin Brewery here in my city. I don't know how that really makes the connection, but it's a wild guess or something was what I was thinking of. So I went with Wild Horse.
No, it works.
That works. So let's go with, I'm gonna throw this one at you. The dice rolling game Dungeon Roll.
I feel like maybe this Dwarven Ale I think would go well with it.
Oh, the Dwarven Ale. Hey.
We just highlighted there.
Yeah, there you go.
So, it's a good dungeon beer.
Yep, good dungeon beer. So you're going with the Bertison's Dwarven Ale as your choice.
I am. That's a good one. How does Courier's sound? What kind of beer would you...
Courier's. Yes. Now, you're going to have to tell me what game that is because I don't think I'm even familiar with that one. How about Coors? I'm not a big fan of that beer, but I'm going to go with Coors because that's the only thing that came to mind. I'm not familiar with the game, but sounded close, so I'm just going to go with that.
That's all right. So Quarriors is a dice-based deck-building game.
Ah-ha.
You buy dice like you would cards in a deck-building game, and then you have like a pool of dice, a bag of dice, to be specific. And then you roll them, and they represent, you know, like energy, mana, or like monsters. You know, there's different faces on these dice.
Ah, gotcha.
It's a clever game.
I gotcha. I'm going to have to play that one. There's just so many of them out there these days that that's kind of the purpose of this, is try to, I guess, inform people about that, and even myself. I mean, I haven't obviously played all these things because there's so much stuff out there. Okay, so I think it's kind of back to my turn here to ask you something, isn't it? What can we
it
do?
Is.
So I'm going to throw the that card game Coup at you.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, you haven't played that one with us? Oh, that's the one where it's a bluffing game where you have these cards and you lay it down and you have like an ambassador and a captain and stuff like that. But yeah, if you played that before, I'm sure you
played it. I have played. Yeah, we played that a while ago. It's been a little while. Yeah. I'm thinking, how about Shock Top?
Shock Top? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know if I'm not even familiar with that beer.
Oh, well, I don't know what to tell you. It's a beer.
It's just a beer. You just,
it's a lighter beer. I know that it's pretty pale.
Right.
But I think it fits.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So that's going to wrap up our segment on what beer goes with what game, and we will head into one of our last segments. And so, Phil, why don't you give me a hand here, and we'll get this drawbridge opened up, and we're going to step into the vault. Come on, Phil. Give me a hand with this. Pull.
All right.
Pull, buddy. Pull, buddy. Pull, buddy.
This is a Sunday, Phil. I don't want to do this.
Well, you got to. Some things have just got to be done.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So for this, the Back in the Vault, this is some discussion we have. We take a look back at some old games that may still be around, or those that possibly, in many cases, are out of print, and we're going to pick a really old one out of the vault here today, which is Starfleet Battle Manual. I don't know how many people had ever played there, if you're even familiar with it, Phil, and I'm going to throw some stuff at you there. But basically, this game was originally launched about 1977. Of course, I'm kind of a big Star Trek fan, so this was very, very appealing to me. You played it on the floor with the ships from Star Trek, you know, your Klingons and your, you know, the heavy cruiser, the Enterprise, whatever most people are familiar with, the Romulan Warbird, the Tholian, and all these different things. There was about eight different ones that were there. And it was a little card that you laid down on the floor. And there was some mechanics as far as, you know, for you to allocate or calculate the amount of energy that the ship produced. And you put it into these systems and you had to log it. So, you know, like life support so you could keep your people alive, and sensors so you could fire your weapons, and then you used these energy points too to charge up your shields and also to power your weapons. But then you moved your little ship on the floor with this grid, and it had a 360-degree arc around it that you used fishing line attached to it to move your ship. And it was a very, very clever game. And God, we used to have so much fun with it. And, you know, they really recommend you playing it like in an 8x8 or something smaller. And I'm going to tell you from personal experience, this was probably a better idea. Because when we used to play it with a lot of my buddies, we would have these big epic games with like seven or eight of us playing on the living room floor at my parents' house when I was a kid. And it would take us so long just to finish the game. And now the more I think about it, the reason being is this room was huge. And what we would do, we would start like 15, 20 feet away from each other. And, you know, when you're moving really fast, you're moving like less than a foot at a time. So you can imagine it took us like an hour just to get into range so we could shoot each other, which was really odd. And but that was the part. You could not use any thing to aid you when you went to shoot. So you had to pick an angle to fire your weapons, and then you pulled out the fishing line. And if it passed through the ship, then you hit it, and then you started, you know, calculating damage and stuff like that. So I just thought it was always funny that I remember reading a review at one point right after this game came out. And I loved the mechanics of it. I thought that was kind of fun. But they said, you know, with all this high tech, you know, advanced stuff from the 24th century, what do you use to shoot stuff with? You guess. And, you know, if you weren't careful, and there was times so that you had to make these rolls and like it would blow the firing arc one way or the other. If you weren't careful about it, what would wind up happening is that you could potentially shoot your buddies and the thing would pass through them. And most inevitably, if they were in front of you, they didn't have their shields up or whatever. And so then you would hit them and do a bunch of damage to them and so on. I have to bring this to our meetup. I've actually shown some people, you know, this game and whatever. So, but really, really fun. So what's the other one that actually Phil, that he actually started with another one? If you kind of look there that they started with, it was actually before this. I think it came out after this was actually came out in 1972. It's totally out of print now. It's gone through two editions and they released a new one, but, they started off with another one. What was the name of that game? It was
Star Trek.
That was the other one that they released right after that.
Oh, the Alien Space Battleman.
Yes.
Yep,
it was that one. And this was really similar, too. They created all these other weird ships that had all these different abilities, but the two games were compatible with one another, so you could play them. And, you know, it's obviously a game that's out of print. I have a whole bunch of stuff for it and whatever. But I'll tell you, if you really want something kind of fun, that was kind of goofy. I really recommend if you can get your hands on a copy of this, picking it up, particularly if you're a Star Trek fan or something. It was so much fun. I've just had a blast. And I've actually shown this to some of the people in our meetup group, particularly the gentleman that runs our the Star Wars X-Wing. I was showing this to him, and he thought it looked really cool. I don't know if that's something some people would be interested in. It's probably a little more of a, you know, hardcore gamer, but really not, kind of lighthearted sort of thing, but just the fun little mechanics of it. But I'd recommend playing it on a smaller table, like the ones that we use at our meetup groups and stuff, because it seems like the game would go a lot faster. I don't know. So kind of maybe listening to my kind of little synopsis and kind of what you've seen, what do you think about that?
I think this is this looks like a lot of fun. I've never heard of this or even anything like it. But I think it's a lot of fun. It sort of smacks of the era sort of before my time when games were kind of brutal.
Right.
Some of them.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean like some old school Monopoly things before they had like an automatic banker, you know, where people had to count, you know. But occasionally games like this come up that are just so off the wall. I mean, fishing line and an exact angle, you know, today. That would never happen, I don't think.
Right.
In a mass-produced game. So I think this is, if you've got this, I definitely think you should bring it. It is pretty hardcore, and maybe we should advertise it as such. You know, it's kind of an intense game. I mean, if we put it up on a meetup.
Right.
But it looks like a lot of fun.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are plenty of people who love, you know, a real challenging, outside the box thinking kind of game like this.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, it's just crawling around on the floor. It was always really hard, though, to get people not to, you know, because they were pretty adamant in the rules. Like, you know, you can't get down and have a few of my buddies that would sit there and use pencils and stuff like that. No. You'd be calling them out. No, you can't do that. And they go, well, no, you're not supposed to do that. And I'm going to tell you, unless you're really close, the estimation of that angle, unless you're really spatial, it's actually really hard to do unless you get really, really close. So, you know, the weapons in the game have a range of like 5 feet. So as long as they're within that range, you could hit them. But I'll tell you, to try to estimate an angle of somebody on a floor without using any, you know, thing to aid you to hit somebody at a distance of 4 feet or 3 feet or whatever, just estimating the angle, it was just so hard to do. You'd think it was easy. You know, go, oh, that's easy. I can see it's that angle. And like you would do it and it would just like blow by the ship, like by about 2 or 3 feet. And you're going, how could I possibly be off by that much? But you were. I mean, it kind of was. And it was just basically one of those things. Everybody would charge up their weapons. You'd move in. Everybody just let each other have it. And then, like, whoever was left standing, you know, and there's different things, like some ships. And if you had to power the shields on it, and if the shields weren't powered up or you didn't have it and you took a bunch of damage and somebody hit it, it just the way the power allocation works in the game, it's almost impossible, with the exception of a couple of ships, to like have all your shields up, because they have them in these quadrants of four. And if you got lucky and you hit through one of them where somebody didn't have it, that's where you really damaged somebody. And, you know, and then like the, you know, you could blow your ship up, and we threw in all kinds of weird little rules and added stuff to it and everything like that. So I don't know, kind of a fun, neat game that I always enjoyed. I like some of this old kind of stuff. But yeah, like I said, if you sound interested in that, I think we're going to definitely maybe have to try a game of that at some point.
Yeah, I think you should bring it out. Throw it up on Meetup sometime.
Yep, sounds
maybe
good.
Maybe as a dedicated Meetup, you know, like specifically this game, like Arkham Horror is specifically Arkham Horror.
Right,
or
X-Wing right.
is just specifically that. Maybe
right.
get this.
Right. I was even thinking, like, learn a new board game. It might fit in there, you know, if somebody's into that kind of thing. That's just kind of my idea on it.
It is a little intense, maybe, for that. Sometimes you get, you know, the more casual gamers might be kind of turned off.
Right, right. No, you know, they might like it, though. You never know.
They might. You're right. We could bring it along, certainly. But, yeah, no, I think you should definitely bring it out one way or another.
All right. So with that, that's our little discussion here on Starfleet Battle Manual. If you're interested in that, I mean, you can find it on Board Game Geek and so on. If anybody's interested, contact me through the show. I could definitely point you in some directions to maybe possibly find a copy of it someplace. So we're going to end in, we'll go flying off into our last little segment here and wrap up the show. So for joining us again for the second episode of the Board Games and Beer podcast, and stay tuned for our next show, where we will hopefully, most likely, have more game talk, more beer, and more interviews. So, Phil, with that, where can people get a hold of us?
You can contact us at boardgamesandbeerpodcast@gmail.com.
We are also on Twitter at @BGBpodcast_game.
And then on our website, which is BGBpodcast.com.
And that is the place where you'll be able to find all of our show notes, links to our email, our Twitter, and everything can be found there. We are also up on iTunes. We are also now up on Stitcher. Anyway, Phil, anything we can add that you would like to add as we kind of roll on out of here?
Nope. Thanks for having me again, Vel. Always a pleasure. A lot of fun.
Okay, sounds good. And we will see everybody on our next podcast. We are generally running about every 2 weeks now. We are a bi-weekly podcast, so stay tuned for our next episode. We'll let you know through the Twitter. You can also check on our webpage. You can also contact the show once again at boardgamesandbeerpodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, we'll talk to everybody the next time. See ya. See you later, Phil.
See you later, Bill.